Hey everyone, and welcome back to Inside the Morgue. We're your hosts and lovely autopsy techs, Jess and Alice. This week we have a very special guest, Julia, from the page My Forensic Path on Instagram, and we're so excited to have you here. Thanks so much for joining us for an episode.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be here. It's cool to actually talk to you guys.
I know. I feel like we've interacted so much on social media. It's so fun to actually...
I mean, yeah. We're not in person, but
right, it's virtually. Something. It still counts.
Yeah, it counts. We'll count it.
So just our first basic question. How long have you been working in forensics?
Oh, boy. So it's just now a little over 4 years that I've been working there. So, I started in my undergrad because where I'm at, they only really hire students. And so that makes up a bulk of our part-time people. And I think I was very lucky that I was able to get in when I first started because we're so small. There was me and maybe two other techs there, so we would handle all of the cases, and it was so overwhelming. But now it's grown so much that there's like 12 or 13 of us. So I'm like, perfect. I don't have to do everything.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, I really like it. It's one of those things, too, where I'm excited to talk to you guys because you guys are at a bigger office, whereas, like I said, where I am, it's very small. We're in a very rural area, and so it's so different. I feel like we're the weird cousins that, like, no one ever talks about because some of the stuff that we do is so strange compared to everyone else. We don't have much fancy technology here, so.
Oh, I know. I want to hear about that. That's, I mean, yeah, we don't have as fancy technology as, like, some, like, medical examiner's offices in big cities either, so.
We have a photo stand and the tripod. The camera is too heavy to be on top, and I literally hold it down with rocks.
We have a bag filled with rocks to, like, balance out the camera.
I love that. We don't even have a tripod for our cameras. We have, like, this really rickety little, like, metal kind of stair, like, case thing on wheels that I just wheel over, and I climb up it and hope that I don't die every single time I go up there.
We have a little step stool.
God, it was horrifying. One of my bosses came into the back and started shaking it, and I was like, no, please, let me down.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God,
that's crazy. Yeah, we have a little stepladder that we have to use if we're taking photos of the bodies because we're both very short. So we have, like, this old, like, wheelie, like, stepladder that we have to wheel over each body.
Right? Yeah. Because then I am so short, too, and I hate it every time. And some of the doctors, their cameras have, like, the fancy little piece that, like, flips out so you can angle it and see what you're taking a picture of.
Yeah.
And the others don't. So I just, like, hold it up and I'm like, please. Please don't make me do this multiple times, and I just hope that I get what I need and that it's not blurry too. And sometimes I'll hand them the camera card and I'm like, I'm so sorry, there's probably 20 pictures of the same thing, and every single one either has my feet in it or it doesn't include what I need.
Oh no. Yeah, I've definitely gone back to look at photos, and I'm like, oh, those are my shoes. Like, I didn't see that when I was taking the photo.
Right. After a while, sometimes, too, I'll talk to the doctor and be like, is it that important that the tips of my shoes are going to be that horrible? Or can I stop now? I'm tired.
So what kind of made you get into forensic pathology? Like, did something, like, inspire you, or you just kind of, like, fell into it?
Oh, man. It was something that... It was quite a path. So growing up, I always wanted to be a scientist. Specifically, I wanted to be a marine biologist ever since I was, like, in first or second grade, too. And, you know, all my friends would be like, I want to be a fairy princess. And I was like, I'm going to be a marine biologist. Like, I'm some old man. But when I was in high school, I think it was, like, my senior year and my junior year, I got really sick for a while. And so I had a hard time going every day. And it put me so behind, and thankfully I was able to keep up at home. But one of the classes that I took as an elective was criminalistics. And so I remember when I got the book, I just, like, flipped through it and I was like, this is so cool. I love this. Like, this is so interesting. And so when I went in at the end of the semester to take the final, I remember talking to him because I, like, didn't have a lot of homework assignments in. I didn't have a lot of stuff that I did. And so my grade was pretty bad. But then I took the final and I did so well that he's like, I'm going to bump your grade up to a B so that way you can pass and move on. And I was like, oh my God, thank you. And he asked me too, he's like, so what are you going to go to college for? And that's when I decided, and I was like, oh, I think I'm going to go for forensics. And he's like, yeah, that's made for you. You should do that. Mm-hmm. And so when I started out, too, I wanted to be a forensic anthropologist. And I loved the show Bones and everything growing up and all the TV shows. But we all know how unrealistic different shows are and can be. And I got to work with a forensic anthropologist here for a little while. And I had so much fun with her. She was so cool. But she ended up leaving to go to a different university, and I was kind of just stuck. So I was like, no, what do I do? And then I was thinking, too, about, like, realistically, with the jobs that are available for forensic anthropologists, there's not a lot, and most of them tend to end up working at museums. And I was like, mm-hmm. I don't want to be that loser who's at the bottom of the bunch who has to just sit at a museum doing stuff I don't want to do. And I was like, I know there's so many other people out there who probably are way more into this than I am that are going to get those jobs that I want. So then I found out that we had forensic pathologists at our school, and I think I always tell people I bothered them enough that they let me work for them, because I would send them an email and be like, hey, I'm really interested in this stuff. Like, can I meet with you guys and talk to you? And so I talked with one of our doctors. He's no longer with us at our office anymore. He moved down to Texas. And he told me everything, and I just, like, fell in love with it right away. I was like, that's what I want to do. I think that's so cool. And finally, after a while, I was able to weasel my way into the Forensic Pathology Center and start working there. And I loved it so much, because I remember walking in, and I was mortified. I was so scared. And I wasn't even scared of what I was going to see. I was just scared that, like, I was going to be that person who threw up. And
me too!
Yes! Like, I don't want to ruin everyone's day. I remember I was, like, mapping out, like, here's an exit. That looks like something I could probably throw up in if I needed to. Like, here's where I need to.
I can pass out here.
Yeah, I was so afraid. And I remember just, like, sitting in the one chair back there, like, clinging onto it. Because I was too afraid to stand up at that point in time. And my first case was honestly probably one of the worst first cases to ever have. So there was, like, police officers everywhere and stuff, too. So I'm like, this is even better. If I throw up, it's going to be in front of, like, 20 people. And I finally, after a bit, the doctor was, like, cruising, going back and forth, and he retired recently, and it was just so funny, because he stops dead in his tracks and, like, turns and looks at me and is like, who are you? Like, what are you doing here? I was like, hi, I'm new, I'm just viewing, and he's like, oh, okay, and he just kept going. But I had so many questions about what was going on, and at first, I would, like, kind of raise my hand because I felt bad, like, interrupting. And then after a bit, I was like, I can't keep doing this. This is stupid. So I finally, like, got up and went over there to see what was going on so I could get more involved. And, like, all of my fear was just gone. And I was just so excited and just enthralled with what we were doing. I was like, this is so cool. I get to see this now.
I remember my first autopsy, Jess was there for it because Jess was already working at the office that we're in. And I remember we opened the body bag and we started, like, undressing the person after we took our photos. And Jess, like, looked at me and was like, are you good? And what you actually saw on my face was just relief that I hadn't thrown up yet, because I was like, okay, I saw a dead person. He smells really bad and I'm not throwing up. I must be okay. And then I was fine after that. I was like, great.
Exactly. I always try to explain that to people where I'm like, I'm not afraid of what's going on. I'm just afraid that I'm going to embarrass myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my very first DCOM case. Oh gosh, it was like someone had drowned in a river and they were in the river for like 2 weeks kind of bobbing around. So they were full blow, and just this person was bagged in multiple bags too. And I was so nervous. I had to, like, acclimate myself to the smell to get used to it. And finally I was like, okay, I can do this. Like, I was just trying to keep myself busy so I wouldn't think about it. And one of the other techs that was there at the time, they kept gagging. And I remember I looked at them and I was like, look, if you throw up, I'm going to throw up. The only thing stopping me from throwing up right now is the sheer embarrassment of it. So you cannot do this to me. And after a while, I think they finally got whatever done that they were doing. And so they took off. And I was like, just let me do the rest of it so I can get this done and go.
Oh, those are seriously the worst cases.
Oh, the full bloat, I've said it multiple times, is my least favorite stage of decomp. Like, I'll take bugs, I'll take any, like, I hate when they're bloated.
But in water, oh, that's so much worse.
Yeah, because it's like, if they're not fully submerged, then it just speeds everything up and, like, they absorb the water and just carry it mm-hmm. around with them. And I'm like, I don't want it. We don't even use, like, our regular chucks and stuff that we would use for every case. We just put, like, the disposable ones down, layer them everywhere. Mm-hmm. For some reason, when COVID happened and everything, and they were sending us stuff that they thought we might find useful, they sent us, like, those puppy pee pads. And we were like, why? But incredibly useful. After all, we use them for like everything now. Like if you spill something on the floor, wipe it up, you're good.
Yep,
like you just keep going. And it's so nice too for pictures because you can just lay it out and then you can flip it over and use the other side and keep going. And we were like, wow, this is actually really great.
We have used similar things.
Yeah. Yep.
And now I'm going off of our going on a tangent now, I have another question that I just thought of to ask you. Have you ever had a food ruined for you because of something you saw in the morgue? Like, I've had times where I couldn't eat rice because I saw too many maggots one day.
Right. So usually, I would say 99% of the time, I'm pretty good. But the only, there's been two times where I've been like, And the one time was after we got like a placenta from the hospital that the pathologist had to go through. So it had already been fixed. Mm-hmm. You pull it out and it just, I did not like the way that it looked or smelled. Like, I wasn't upset about it. I was like, I'll do whatever. But then, like, a week later, my friend was having some dinner party or something where he made steaks. And, like, I don't know what kind of seasoning he used, but I cut into it and I put it up to my nose and just set it down and was like, absolutely not. I can't do this. Whoa. I cannot do it. And it was so weird because, like, it doesn't – usually smells don't impact me in that way. Like, mm-hmm. if ever I need to, sometimes I'll put, like, peppermint essential oil in my face mask. And I love peppermint still. Like, it does not faze me whatsoever because everyone's like, oh, don't do that. It'll ruin the smell for you. And I'm like, nah. It's fine. I love this. I can sniff it all day. But, yeah, that one got me. And another time was when I went to a conference in Seattle with one of my friends, and he wasn't in the conference or anything. He was just there with me, so I didn't go alone to Seattle. And we went out to eat at a French restaurant, and he was like, oh, yeah, Julia, you have to try this foie gras. Like, it's so good. And I was like, what is that? I don't know, and I don't try things that I don't know. And he's like, no, you have to try it. And after we went back and forth for a while, he finally told me that it was, like, duck liver. And I was like, I don't know, but he kept swearing up and down that it was, like, the best thing you could ever have in your life. So finally I, like, scrape off a little bit of the side, and I put it in my mouth, and immediately my eyes are watering, and I had to spit it out so fast. And I felt bad because our waiter was French, too, so I was like, now I'm just being insensitive. And I felt so bad. And I was like, I can't. It's like serrated liver. I just put that in my mouth, and I can't do it, and it's so bad. And I was like, I'm Paxton, and I'm never trusting you ever again. How could you do that to me? I was so mad about it. And then later I found out, like, how they make foie gras and they, like, force feed ducks. And I was like, well, now I don't feel that bad. You're horrible for doing that. I'll spit it out again.
Yeah. I have the benefit of being a vegetarian. So, like, meats and stuff don't bother me. Like, because I know some interns have come into our office. They're like, well, I can't eat my sandwich that I brought in for lunch because that meat on my sandwich looks like a lot like this person on the table. And I was like, oh, I don't have to worry about that. I'm a vegetarian. But certain things still get to me.
I just constantly think of the one time one of the pathologists that we were working with smelled the stomach contents. And he was like, oh, yeah, they had angel hair pasta and red wine. And that, I can't with that.
Fully, he's so old school and just does not care, and he just held it right up to his face.
No.
And
I'm like,
no, sir, please.
Yeah, that's the one thing too, like, stomach contents always kind of just makes me like, I don't want it.
It's the worst.
I will stand as far away as I can when I'm cleaning up after with, like, our little spray hose, and I just try to spray it down the sink as fast as I can, because I'm like, I don't want it near me. I don't want to smell it. Mm-mm. Put my hands in there if I have to, but I don't want to think about it.
It's the smell, really. It's the smell that gets to me, too, with the stomach content.
Oh, yeah. Especially, like, when I have to take out the neck block and stuff. And I think I've gotten so good at it so fast purely because I don't want to sit there with my hands in it if there is like purge or vomit or something. I'm like, I don't want it. So then I just fly through it and I hand it off and they're like, Julia, you're so fast. Like, you're so good at this. And I'm like, yeah, it's because I don't want to deal with it anymore.
That's how I am with the pelvic block.
Yeah.
You'll be a puke in there.
I just don't want it.
There was one case I did a while ago where they were on some antibiotic, and I forget what it was, but I remembered it from when I was a little kid because I had to take that all the time, and it smelled so bad, and it just makes your urine smell weird too. So when I, like, opened up to get in there because, like, there was barely anything left in the first place, and I smelled it, I, like, set everything down and walked away. I was like, no, I can't. It's so, so bad. It's just, I know. And no one else smelled it either. And I was like, okay, really? Good for you guys because you get to do it then.
Really?
You're like, all right, see you later.
Okay, great. Your turn.
I'll go sit down. Bye.
One of our other questions that we had is, so your Instagram page is really big and, like, that's how we found you and connected. So what kind of made you start that page?
So I remember kind of during the pandemic and everything going on, I started to see a lot of like other StudyGram like pages online, and I was like, oh, these are just really nice to look at. I don't know what it was. And so then after I looked at so many, I started finding more related to forensics, and I was like, oh, that would be kind of cool just to get to know some of these people and talk to them. And so then I started my own page to also kind of hold me accountable, because I noticed that, like, I just got so drained during that time that I didn't want to do anything, and I didn't want to do my schoolwork anymore. So I was like, well, now if I post about it, like, I have to do it. And I ended up doing that, and then was like, oh, yeah, there's other people here that, you know, might benefit from learning things that I do or, like, how I do things, because I'm a first-generation student. And so trying to navigate, like, graduate school or how to apply to med school and stuff like that, way over my head. I had no idea whatsoever, and I was so overwhelmed. And so I got a lot of help from the other pages there. So then as I learned more, I was like, okay, yeah, I can talk about this and this stuff. And then a lot of people were like, oh, we want to learn more about, like, what you do. And then, two, noticing, like, the severe shortage of forensic pathologists right now, mm-hmm. and, like, how it's just mm-hmm. getting worse, I was like, well, maybe I can encourage other people to also take this route. Because when you hear from some old doctor, like, I went through, like, 13 years of school, and I've been working this, and I'm tired, like, it doesn't really make you want to do it.
Yeah, it's not very inspirational.
Not super inspiring, yeah.
Right, and so I was like, if people can see me, and I feel like I'm a very regular person, I'm not, like, above average in anything I would say about myself. Other people might say otherwise, but I don't like to take compliments, apparently. But
relatable.
I feel that on a spiritual level.
I was going to say, relatable.
I feel like I can at least relate to people. And I always tell people, even my students, because over the summer, sometimes I'll help, like, teach high school students biology and chemistry and math, stuff like that. I always tell them, I'm like, as a scientist and just as a human being, I fail all the time. I fail every single day. Like, that's just what makes us human, and that's how science kind of works. You just have to fail, and eventually you figure it out, and you get there. Like, that's the process. But, yeah, I started talking about it, because I was like, I want people to see someone who's also going through the process at the same time, or maybe more recent, because how applications change each year is, like, drastic. And so yeah. Someone's advice who's now been in the field for 40 years isn't going to help you when you have to do a million other things to try to get in, whereas I can actually, like, show what it might be like right now, so that way people can see that. And that's what really kind of helped. And then I met so many other people too, and it's really good for networking. I didn't think about that when I started it, and now I've met so many people that, like, when I go to forensic science conferences, I'm like, oh, I know you. I read your paper the other day. I saw this on Instagram, or, like, people recognize me too. And it makes me so excited. And someone I met at this recent conference, they said they followed me too, and they were talking about my cats, because I always post them on my story, and they're like, she has one cat with, like, one eye, and, like, he's really old, and then she has this other cat. And I'm just like, I love that you know so much about my cats. That makes me so happy.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and yeah. So one of the people I used to work with when I was an undergrad, she always says too, like, people need to see someone who is not, like, the stereotypical version of a scientist to show people that, you know, scientists and people in medicine can be fun. You don't have to give up your whole life and be boring just to work in the field. So I'm like, yeah, I can be cool.
I'm cool. I'm hip.
Like, yeah, I can do stuff. Although half the time, a lot of my coworkers are so much younger than me. They're probably like 6 or 7 years younger than me. And they have to teach me stuff all the time. Like what different apps are, like the Be Real app. I had no freaking clue until they're like, oh, it's time to be real. And I was like, what does that mean? what are you talking about? Why are you taking a picture of me? I was so confused.
That's Jess for me. Jess is younger than me, and we constantly joke about it. We're only like 5 years apart, but just like...
Exactly. It's like there's such a difference. And every day, like someone, like I think it was a few months ago, insulted me online in some way that I didn't understand. And they called me an NPC, and I was like, what? I don't get this. And then whenever I would ask someone about it, they would laugh and they're like, that's the most NPC thing that you could do. And I was like, well, what does it mean?
That is so lame. Oh my God.
That's so frustrating.
Who took the time to do that, though?
I get that you're insulting me right now, but I don't even know what to say to you because I don't understand.
Oh my God.
But yeah, I think I'm decently cool.
You are. You're very cool. I love you.
We think you are.
Yay! I just had my university, they actually asked me if I could be, they call it a leader in action. And so they write like a little article on you and interview you, and you can do like a video, and they do a whole photo shoot. And I really didn't think it was going to be like as big of a thing as it apparently is. So they show up to the med school when I'm there, and I thought, you know, we'd be in a little room so that way it's not so weird. No, we're like full setup. There's multiple cameras and they have the lighting things. And I go and sit in the center and I'm like, oh my God.
That's so cool.
Everyone's staring, trying to see what's going on. And my advisor comes over and like leans around the wall and just watches me. And then he like goes back. And a few seconds later, there's him and like three other people who lean around the corner of the wall. And I was like, oh God, I'm so scared now. But yeah, I talked about that too. Like I talked about my page and everything that I do and how I just want to inspire other people to kind of go on the same path and, you know, show that it's okay to be a human and be in this field and, you know, also talk about like a little bit on the forensic side and how it is because, you know, a lot of people like to see the ideal picture of forensics too. Mm-hmm. And like, I love it and I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. But, you know, sometimes there are really difficult things that we have to do that can be hard. And so it's good to have an open conversation about that. So, you know, it also shows people that we care. Like, it's not like we just run in there and are like, woohoo, and chopping at everything, having a blast.
Yeah, we're not robots.
Yeah, we still have feelings. And, like, I care about every case that comes in. And immediately, because sometimes we'll have, you know, being a smaller place and all, we'll have some investigators come in that are like, and they say like stupid things, you know, kind of more judgmental, and I'm immediately like super defensive, like, what did you say? Can't say that, you don't know them. And I mean, I don't call them out because I feel like I get in a lot of trouble, but it ruins my image of them in my head forever. I'll write about it in my diary when I get home.
You feel like protective over the people you're trying to help. Yeah.
It's like I don't know their story. I'm not gonna judge them for what they've been through or what they're going through. And that was something too. One of my other friends on TikTok and Instagram, she also does like death investigation trivia stuff on TikTok lives once a month. And it's so fun because it's like people, like anyone, can join and like play as well. So that way it helps people learn about what we're doing and combat like misinformation that floats around. And we were kind of joking around. And, you know, being in the field, you have to have a sense of dark humor. And I always tell people, like, there's a line that we don't cross. We always put, like, the decedent first. Like, we do everything good by them. And so we're not necessarily making fun of them. And we kind of joked about an overdose or something. Not a specific case, but just in general. She has, like, a magic eight ball that any person who answers a question, she'll roll it and see, like, how you die. And on there it says, like, overdose sometimes. And I was like, well, I guess if you're going to go out with a bang. Like, something like that. And someone was like, I don't understand. Overdoses aren't funny. And I was like, no. That's not, like, what we're getting at
right,
here. Like,
not I'm saying. Not,
like, I understand. Like, I have people in my family and my friends that have struggled with addiction and stuff. So it's not coming from a place of judgment. It's just a... make it more lighthearted because it's a dark
coping.
Topic.
Yeah, it's a coping mechanism.
It's a coping, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We do it all the time.
Yeah. If you don't laugh, you're gonna have a hard time.
Yeah.
You're gonna struggle in this industry if you can't laugh.
You can't. Yeah. If you don't love it, and yeah, it's gonna be a hard time for you if you don't like it.
Because that's something, like, people always ask me too. You know, I always get those comments that are like, oh, tell us about, like, your worst case or your hardest case. And I'm like, no. But I feel like most of my cases that I've done, I really don't get impacted because the people that I work with are just such a great group of people. And so it's easy to have that support group there. And I think I've only done one case where afterwards I came home and I, like, shut down. And I was done for, like, a week where I just didn't do anything. And at first I was like, why am I like this? Like, what is going on? Like, why am I this upset? And then I went to the med school the one day for a class. And afterwards I walked into one of the doctor's offices and I just, like, turned around and closed the door and I just started crying. And he's like, oh, okay. I was like, I got to sit in here for a little bit. And after that, like, I felt better. And he's like, that was a hard case. That wasn't great. Yeah. And I was like, yeah. It was, and then I couldn't even say anything. I just sat there and cried, and then I was done, and I was like, okay.
I've had days like that, too. I've had days like that, too, and especially when I first started, I tried to keep a lot of my feelings to myself if I was having a hard day, because I was like, oh, I can't let people see, like, they won't think I'm cut out for this, and then I started talking more to Jess and other people in our office, and I was like, oh, other people feel this way, too. It's okay to have feelings, and, like, have emotions about it.
I've broken down in my car. I've broken down in our office manager's office multiple times.
Yep.
I remember one time I was working a case and I came home. It was a kid case, so, like, those cases always hit me harder. And Alice was away, so I was the only one back there because it's just the two of us during the week. And I was sitting on my bed and my mom came in and I immediate tears. I was like, Mom, today was the worst day ever.
Right. Sometimes it's just, like, little things, too. Like, there are some cases where I'll, like, pull out some of their belongings, and it's, like, one little thing, and you're like,
yeah. Ah.
Or, like, we'll have someone who comes from the hospital, and then I pull out, like, some little stuffed animals or something, and I'm like, oh, God, I'm gonna lose it. Like, I can't.
Uh-huh.
And
so when I see family pictures and wallets.
Oh, my God. That's always the worst, too, because you're like, those poor people. Or, like, when they come from an accident or something like that, and then their phone keeps ringing.
Yes! I talked about that recently. That gets me every time. I'm like, someone's trying to get in contact with them, and they're never gonna get them. I'm like,
The
worst thing, because it's like, I'm looking at it, and I can see that, like, their wife or whoever is trying to call them, and I'm like, oh, my God, I can't even imagine what they're going through right now. And that's just so scary. Like, I could never.
Yeah.
And it just makes me feel so bad.
It's so hard. I remember there was one case we were working. It was a younger person who had died in a car accident, I believe. And I was, like, going through their belongings. And I found something from their mom that said, like, drive safe or something.
Oh, and I remember that.
I, like, looked at Jess, like, I had, like, tears were welling up. I looked at Jess and I showed her, and Jess was like, take a deep breath, we'll cry together later, we have a job to do. And I was like,
okay. If you cry now, I'm crying.
I know, she's like, we'll cry together after this is over. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, it's so hard sometimes. Oh my gosh. And a lot of it you can kind of just push back, but then every now and then I'll go home and be like, remember that case we did, like, 6 months ago? Where we, like, found this one thing in their wallet. Oh, my God. And then I just start crying. And I'm like, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's so good to have that support system in the office. Because, like, you get, like, everybody gets it. And they're all going through it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Because it's, like, you need to talk about it. And you can't just talk to anyone about what's going on. Or, like, the things that you have to do. Because then, too, either they're definitely not going to understand. But also, it's, like, I'm not about to tell a decedent's personal information to everyone.
Yeah.
And so then it just makes it so much harder because you have to sit there and you're like, what can I say? What can't I say? Like, how do I approach this and not make myself seem like a psychopath? Like,
Right.
With all this stuff.
That's the big thing.
Yeah. And even like little things too, like certain achievements or something that I do, or like if I learn a new dissection kind of thing, I'll get so excited about it. And I have to sit there and be like, who can I even tell this to right now?
Us, tell us.
I just recently, a few weeks ago, one of our doctors taught me how to remove eyes in like different cases of possibly like shaken baby syndrome and stuff like that, or whatever it might be if there's any injuries. And so he did one and I did the other, and I was like so impressed with myself. It took me forever. He had to help me because I just like could not get myself to use the amount of pressure that I needed to. Mm-hmm. I just didn't think eyeballs were that hard for some reason. Don't really know why. And then I felt it and was like, huh. But I sat there just like holding this little eye and I was like, wow, it's so cute. I was like, man, I wish I could just like keep it in a little jar on my desk and I could look at it forever. And then I was telling the doctor that and he looks at me and he's like, don't say that outside of this office.
Don't say that in public.
You just go home and write about it in your diary. You're like, dear diary, today I took out an eye.
I just love like collecting weird things too. Obviously, I'm gonna put a disclaimer here before like someone I work with watches this and is like, Julia, did you like steal an appendix or something? I don't take things from work. As much as I see cool things, I don't take anything. But I had my wisdom teeth removed like last year. And when I was in my, like, drug-induced state when I woke up, I don't even remember. I somehow asked them if I could take my teeth back with me, and they gave it to me. And so I remember because I got into my friend's car when she came to get me, and I was just so excited. I was like, oh, my God. And I started calling everyone, and I was like, look at my teeth. I got my teeth back.
I wish I asked for mine now. I didn't know that was an option.
Right, yeah.
I thought they just threw it out.
Because my one friend went to that same place, and he had tried to ask later on, and they were like, no. So I was like, what did I say that somehow convinced them to give me my teeth back?
I love this. That's so funny.
I still have them. I even have, like, a video saved on my phone where I sent a message, because it was also, like, a match for all the medical students and stuff, and I sent her a message. You can't even understand what I'm saying. There's blood, like, all over my face. And I'm just mumbling. And I'm like, I love you. Look at my teeth. I'm proud of you for getting in. Bye. And I'll, like, just end it.
Incredible.
I was like, oh, wow. And I called, like, half the doctors at work and one of my coworkers to show them. I also tried to convince one of the doctors to take me to Pizza Ranch. It's, like, a pizza buffet place here. Delicious. Oh, love it. And I was like, it'll be okay. It'll work fine. Because I'll just rip off little pieces of the pizza and I'll put it in my mouth and let, like, the salivary amylases and lipases break it down. And then I'll just swallow it.
You just wanted to suck on the pizza.
Yeah. My friend, like, stopped and looked at me and was like, how the hell do you still know this when you're drugged out of your mind? And I was like, I don't know.
Like, I don't know. Look at my teeth.
And then I remember panicking when she went in to get me my medication. And I was like, I've been abandoned. Like, I have to call someone else. And I just freaked out. And then she came back and I was like, oh, wow. Okay.
That's so great.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And I feel like every time I go somewhere and I know that I'm going to be like knocked out for whatever medical procedure, I always warn them to, like, I work in forensics. I might say something really weird. Please don't be scared. Like,
disclaimer.
I know a lot of things. I've seen a lot of things. Anything could happen. But work is always an interesting thing. I think one of my favorite stories to tell people is about the time that I actually got poisoned at work.
What?
I was just going to ask about your most frequently asked question or most told story, so this seems to be going into that area.
So we had a case come in where they ingested a substance that, not great, and it was intentional too. So we were doing this case, and the doctor was like, okay, like, we'll get it out, and then we're going to submerge everything in water, and because, you know, there's some off-gassing and stuff. And I was like, yeah, whatever, not a big deal. I can go fast. I'm speedy. And it was just me and two other people. So the one guy, my one friend, was just kind of cleaning and getting everything done so we could get in and out. And my other friend who was there, she ended up helping me a little bit because when I opened him up, because of all, like, the stuff going on and off-gassing, it was just very, like, liquidy inside. And so it was hard for me to hold everything. So I was like, okay, I just need you to hold this while I get this other thing out, hold the intestines out of the way, stuff like that. So they were kind of in there. But when I'm, like, really in the zone of working, my, like, whole body is, like, leaned over the decedent, and I'm just grabbing at things to get it out because I want to just get it done and over with. And so I was really breathing everything in.
Oh, no.
And take everything out. And this doctor likes everything by, like, and blocking everything, too. So I just kind of take it out. It's not super long, but it took me a little bit longer than usual just because everything was just so wet. And he submerges it, and we're doing our thing, and we go home. And that night, I was actually going to see Slipknot with some of my friends. And so I'm driving out there, and I notice, like, my nose is running. But I'm like, I have allergies. My nose runs every single day of my life, all the time. It never goes away. And then I, like, my head was starting to hurt a little bit, and I was like, well, I get chronic migraines. Is what it is. And my eyes started to water, which happens every now and then, and I'm like, oh, well, I guess, I don't know. It just is what it is. And we get out there, and I went out to eat with some of my friends first because I was so hungry. And, like, I remember driving to pick some of them up, and I was, like, hitting curbs. And I was like, this is so weird. Like, why do I feel, like, I feel fine. Like, nothing feels wrong, but I don't, why am I driving so bad? And they're like, Julia, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I don't understand what's happening. And, like, I was just kind of, like, slamming on the brakes here and there when I'd have to stop. And usually I like to think that I'm really good at driving. But they're like, please drop us off alive. And I was like, okay, I'll try my best. And so I go to this concert finally with some of my other friends, and while I'm there, I was just so into it that, like, when they would stop to, like, set everything up in between sets and whatnot, I would be like, oh, wow, my head really, really hurts. But then music would start again, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, and I would just keep going. And then after everything was done, I was like, yeah, I want to go home. Like, I got to drop my friend off. And so I started driving home, and, like, the period of me dropping my friend off at home to when I got home, just, like, gone in my memory completely. And I was like, what? That's so weird. And I have some memory issues, but I was like, I've never had just, like, a period of time just completely gone where I was, like, panicking because I think I left some of my stuff at his house, too. So I was like, how did this happen? Like, what did I do? And so then went to bed, went to work the next day, and I'm sitting in the office. And one of the other doctors runs in and is like, Julia, do you have any of these symptoms? And, like, list everything. And I was like, oh, yeah, I mean, I have those every single day of my life. What do you mean? And she's like, no, you were poisoned. And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, so you have organophosphate poisoning because of off-gassing from doing the case. And I was like, oh, my God. And so then she's like, I have to ask you, like, some personal questions just so we can see if we need to send you to the hospital or not. And I was like, oh, my God. But, like, thankfully, like, we're fine. the doctor had it the worst out of anyone. He came in and was like, I was salivating like I was at a Golden Corral because it just, like, it was everywhere. And he said he was walking around and, like, leaving cabinets open, like the fridge and all that. And so two of the doctors, they're married. And so she had to, like, follow behind him and close everything. And she's like, what happened? Like, what's going on with him? And yeah, I was like, oh, my God. So then I looked into it because I was like, I kind of heard about it before, but not a lot. And that's, like, the gas that they used in World War One to kill people. Yep.
I think we've talked about it in, like, a previous episode. I think it was, like, in the show because, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and I was like, oh, my God. I had memory problems, like, for the next few months, too. It was so weird. It would just be very random. So it wasn't every day. And it was so, so strange. But I remember sitting there because he felt so bad that it happened. And so I was like, will you get us pizza? And so he orders a pizza. And I wanted them to, like, spell out in pepperoni, like, sorry, I poisoned you. But they wouldn't do that. And so.
Oh, my God.
That day, he also had to run something down to the police department to drop it off. And so I quickly texted, like, one of my friends who's over there. And I was like, you have to arrest the doctor for, like, almost killing me. And he's like, what happened? And I was like, he poisoned me.
He poisoned me. That's so funny.
I always joke around with him. And I always pretend, like, every time I tell the story, I make it a little bit worse every time. Just to make it seem really bad.
More dramatic. I love that.
And there was one time in one of my classes last semester. It was a general pathology class. And they started talking about neurotoxins. And I was like, oh, my God. And they mentioned organophosphates. And I was like, oh, my God, I can tell you all about this. And I, like, raised my hand, and I was like, I've had organophosphate poisoning. Thanks to this doctor. And they're like, wait, what? I was like, yes, it was one of the worst and the best times. And I always joke around now where I'm like, I'm like, I'll willingly poison myself if that means that you're going to buy me food after. Anytime. And he's like, I go into the back and, like, catch you drinking bleach, I'm gonna be so mad. And I was like, you'll never know.
Just your coffee cup has bleach in it.
Yeah, I was like, I am a poor student, I'll take what I can get.
The lengths we go to for free food.
There was one time, because I'm closer with these doctors, and so I talk with them a lot, and I was just panicking about, like, I don't even know. I was like, I'm a terrible person. I'm never going to get into med school. My family hates me. Something stupid, you know, at, like, 10 o'clock at night. So the next day when they actually, like, wake up and see it, they're like, are you okay? Like, what's wrong? So they took me out to lunch at this, like, Chinese buffet, and I'm very allergic to shellfish. But, like, I've grown up with that, so, like, I know how to navigate these things and, like, watch for them. And halfway through, one doctor looks at me and she's like, wait, you're, like, really, really allergic. Are you okay? Like, should you be eating this? And I was like, oh, well, I'm sitting with two doctors. If I go on anaphylaxis, like, you guys went to med school? And they were like, no!
Don't do that!
Yeah. And I was like, no, I'm fine. It's gonna be okay. And they were like, that's not the kind of doctor we are. It was even funnier because after that, too, we were paying before we left. And the one, he had to do math in his head just to, like, calculate how much for a tip. And he just could not for the life of him do it. So he typed it out on the calculator. And he's like, the best part is that I'm a doctor. And the lady behind us was like, that's terrifying. And I turned around and I was like, I don't think he's a doctor you have to worry about anytime soon.
He's not going to be your doctor anytime soon, hopefully.
Yeah, I was that's like, so it's funny. Okay. You're good.
Knock on wood.
I know, right?
If I saw her recently, I'd feel real bad. I'd be like, oh no, I jinxed it. Sometimes I think about that stuff too, like, because I live on my own, and so I'm always worried, because, you know, we always find people, like, in the bathroom and stuff too, and yep. So I'm always super conscious about that, where, like, if I'm ever not feeling good, I'll be like, they cannot see me. And like this, at work, they cannot do an autopsy on me. They cannot see me without clothes on my body. And I'll, like, drag myself out. Like, I can't die here.
I can't die like this. I need to be presentable. Oh my.
Make sure you're fully dressed.
Yeah, I was like, yep. Because so, funny random story. I, for whatever reason, there are certain foods that I just really like that I then lack all self-control. And so one of those is soup for some reason, where I can't tell when I'm full when I'm eating soup, and I don't know why. And so I'll make baked potato soup, delicious, love it. And so I make so a big good. Pot because I want this to last me like a week so that way I don't have to cook throughout the week. It maybe lasts me like 2 days. I just eat so much of it. So then I ate too much that, like, my stomach can't expand anymore. It's at its limit. Like, it is thick and heavy. And so, like, my body is not prepared for this. And so then I just start to feel really sick and, like, I'll get all sweaty. So I call it the soup sweats. Like, in Friends, when Joey says the meat sweats when you eat yes. too much meat. So I'm like, it's the soup sweats. And I'll tell my friends about it. So I'm like, if you don't hear from me in a little while, just call an ambulance. Because then I'm, like, in the bathroom and, like, my hearing is, like, starting to go. Like, I'm vasovagaling or something. And I'm like, I'm going to die in here. Yeah. I do always joke with our one doctor, too, because I really like those, like, little mini weenies, especially when you wrap them in bacon and stuff and you, like, dunk them in whatever. So delicious. Mm-hmm. Or, like, pigs in a blanket. And he judges me very harshly for eating those because they're so unhealthy. And so I always tell him, I'm like, okay, so when I die when I'm, like, 45 and you do my autopsy, you have to put complications of mini weenies on my death certificate.
Line two, soup sweats.
Line two, soup sweats.
It's accurate. You can't tell me otherwise. So, that's and he so just funny. Laughs. He's like, oh, my God, no. I'm very much so a stress eater. So every now and then I'll come home and be like, what's good? And then I just eat everything.
So we saw that you attended AFIS, the conference in Colorado. How was that?
It was so fun. I loved it. I've never been to Denver before, and so I honestly was very underwhelmed. I think I really built up my expectations of Denver, and so when I got there, I was like, this is not what I thought it was going to be, some, like, miracle city that everyone says it is. But I really didn't get to explore all that much. The mountains were beautiful in the background, but because I went essentially just on my own. And so when I got there, some of my other friends were there that were in the forensics program here at this university. And then the chair of the forensics department went. And I've met her a few times. She was wonderful. And so she saw me and was like, okay, like, you're going to stick with us. Like, you have to go to this meeting. You have to go to this thing. And you have to do this, this, and this. And I was like, okay.
Like, great.
Thank you for telling me what to do. Because I applied to be a student member of the Path Bio section. And so she was also, like, was the head of that section too, and so she's like, you gotta go to this meeting because, like, that's where they're gonna tell you that you got in. And I was like, okay, thanks. Thanks for letting me know that I got in.
Awesome. Oh, that's so cool.
But it was so fun just to interact with so many different people, and I always love it too because I'm like, these are my people. Yes. They like the same things, they talk about the same weird things, like, we can just get along really, really well. And so yeah. I met a lot of people that I do know on Instagram, and then some of the people who followed me, and they would come and talk to me. And so it was so exciting to see everyone and have just a good time. And I got really close with the chair of the forensics department too, and she's so funny. I loved talking with her. Like, we would be walking around, especially for, like, the poster sessions, and then they have, like, a session going on for colleges to come and, like, represent their programs so they can hand out stuff to students and the university fair, all that stuff. And she would see people and, like, lean over. And she's Romanian, too, so she'd be like, mortal enemy. And I was like, okay, noted, we don't like that person. And then she would laugh and be like, oh, no, you don't have to actually hate them, like, I'm just joking around. And I was like, no, if you don't like them, I don't like them, I won't tell anyone about it. Again, I'll go write about it in my diary later about how much we hate them, but I'm on your side.
You were ride or die. You're like, no, we hate them.
I will always, like, I'll go into the doctor's office and be like, so what do we think about this person? And they'll be like, oh, yeah, they're super nice, or, oh, they're kind of weird, stuff like that. And I always tell them, like, so do we like this person, or how do we feel about
how
this?
How do
and
we feel?
I support whatever.
Yeah, I'm like, you know them better than anyone else. Like, I'm going to trust what you say. Mm-hmm. But, it was a lot of fun. There were so many cool different posters to go and look at, too, and to get to know everyone and just interact in that kind of capacity, where you just are there to learn. So everyone wants to learn something, and it's not like, you know, when you're in a class or something, how half the people don't want to be there. It's like everyone's just so excited for what you're going to talk about and, like, what you're going to do, and I loved it. It was great. There was one presentation, though, where I did feel really bad because I thought it was something else. It was called feline forensics. So in my brain, for Path Bio section, I was like, it's going to be about cats eating dead people. I'm all for it. I want to hear about this. It's going to be so cool. I get in there. No. It's forensic veterinary stuff. And so she's talking about, like, decomposing cats. And this includes a bunch of pictures of it. And I sat there, like, with my eyes covered, and I was looking down so that way I wouldn't cry. And I was like, I understand that this is really important, and, like, it's good work that you guys are doing because this helps with investigations, but, like, I can't do it.
Misleading title.
I don't know what to do right now. And, like, I was, like, in the middle, kind of to the front of the room too, so it's not like I could just get up and leave. I felt so bad, but I was like, I'm sure they'll understand. It'll be okay.
Oh, my God. I can't imagine. See, I feel like that's something people think is weird. Like, we see dead people all the time, but, like, animals, it's different. I don't know how to...
Exactly. And that's something that I try to explain to people. I don't know what it is that makes it so much different. I don't know if it's just that, like, the animals are always so innocent and, like, sweet. And I don't know. I just want to hold them. But yeah. It's like, I don't know how to explain it. But so many people have that same...
Yeah, it's not uncommon. A lot of people feel the same way. Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. It's like, I want them to be okay. And where we're at, so, like, if there is an animal that is killed or something for one reason or another, if it's in relation to a homicide, we then have to do the necropsy for that. And I remember hearing about that, and I was like, what? No. And there was one time, I didn't find out until the doctor came back and was like, okay, we have a potential homicide that we just got to look at. Like, we're going to do some x-rays to make sure there's no, like, bullet fragments or, like, knife tips, whatever it might be. And then from there, I think we can say that it's good. But if it is a homicide, we also have to necropsy the two dogs that are in there. And I was like, two dogs? What? And she's like, oh, yeah, like, we're going to have to pull them out and look because, you know, sometimes that happens. And I was like, I can't do that. I looked at her and I was like, look at me. Look at me in the eyes. I can't do that. And yeah. My one coworker was there and he looked at me and he looked terrified. And I was like, no. Like, I'm just going to start crying. Like, I can't do it. And thankfully it wasn't a homicide. So we could just send them on their way and they were fine. But oh my God, I was panicking. And we've had a few other times too where, like, car accidents, if the animal's in the car, I don't know if they just, like, can't tell the difference between what's what, but, like, sometimes they'll put the animal in the body bag too, so then we'll open it and I'll see it and I'm like, no, I'm gonna close this and I'm gonna walk away until someone takes care of it. Like, I can't. It's horrible. It makes me so sad. And yeah. I remember a while ago, I'm not gonna say which page it is, because I haven't followed them since this, but they posted a video where it's supposed to be a pathology page, but they posted a video of a horse getting hit by, like, a semi-truck, and with no warning or anything, too.
What?
Yeah, and I remember sitting there, and I was like, oh, my God. And there were people in the comments that were like, hey, can you know, maybe, like, put a warning or something so that way we know and we can avoid it. And this person actually got, like, annoyed and was like, well, you're on a pathology page. Like, why you...
That's not pathology, though.
Yeah.
And they were like, if you're okay with seeing people this way, you should be fine with animals. Like, there's something wrong with you if you think differently. And this is a person who does work in pathology, too. And so I was like, what do you not grasp here? Like, oh, this is so inappropriate and so bad that, like, after that, I was like, absolutely not. I can't.
Wow.
Yeah, because I was like, that's a lot. It's one thing to, like, show an image of something, like, of a horse, you know, if they were doing a necropsy, and, like, you know, you show the organs to compare it, or, like, bones or whatever.
Yeah.
But to post that whole video? Mm-mm.
I don't like videos in general. Like, even if, like, for a case, if there's a video of, like, an accident or something, or, like, I can't watch the videos. I've done it, like, once or twice where I've watched it, and then I just can't do it.
Yeah, no, it's always just so depressing.
Yeah, just, like, to kind of, like, wrap up our little interview here. So, obviously, our show, we talk about all of, like, the true crime dramas that are out there. We have our favorites. What is one of your favorites?
Ooh, okay. So, are we talking about, like, documentary-style stuff or, like, more true crime kind of basic TV shows?
Like, crime dramas, yeah. Like, not documentary-style. Although, if you want to throw those in there, too, go ahead. Any recommendations?
My favorite show is Psych. I love it.
You're the second. So, we actually talked to Dr. Eric Hanberg last week, and he loves Psych.
I think that's one of the reasons why I get along really well with Eric. So, if he's listening, hi, Eric. but we both just really like Psych. I love that show so much. And I watched it all the time when I was a kid. And then I found that they have it on, like, Amazon Prime now or something like that for free. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yes. I've had to watch it so many different times. But I love that one so much. It just makes me laugh. But then more drama-related stuff. Probably Bones is going to be up there. I watched that a lot when I was younger. And, like, along with NCIS, I liked those a lot. And Criminal Minds. Those were, like...
Oh, I binged Criminal Minds so much.
I love that show. I love it so much. And then the new stuff that they're coming out with, too. Can't wait. Mm-hmm. I love it. I don't know. It's, like, one of those shows that it's, like... It's so messed up, but it's, like, a comfort show. I love watching it and having it in the background.
Yeah, I've watched... I think I've watched, like, 3 seasons of that show, and I agree. I was like, it's just a comfort show. And everybody's like, are you okay?
That's how I feel about Grey's Anatomy at this point.
Yes.
My sister's very into Grey's.
Yeah, I recently watched it because I was like, I feel like I'm the only person in medicine who hasn't watched it at this point. Mm-hmm. And so I went through it, and, like, here and there, it, like, kind of lost me a little bit. But I like to have a show on while I do stuff. But then, like, every now and then, I would sit down and, like, have a minute to take a break. And I'd start watching it and be like, oh, wow. Like, what's going on now? Or they would say something kind of stupid. And I'd be like, oh, my God. Why?
You're like, that's wrong.
Red flag. I do that every time I'm watching a show. Because I'll sit there and, like, be half paying attention. But I think I have, like, some kind of sonar for just detecting when someone says something that doesn't make sense and is stupid. And I'll, like, lift my head up and I'm like, no, that's wrong. No.
And let me tell you why.
Sometimes it just makes me so, like, annoyed, too. Because I'm like, why would you do that? Why would you say that? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And then I'm like,
that's what our whole show's about.
Yeah. I think about it all the time because I'm like, red flag. Nope. Can't do it. We're done.
I was listening to a podcast earlier. I think it was actually this morning while I was getting ready for work. And the person said somebody hung themselves. And I out loud was like, hanged. And, like, nobody's there to hear me. I'm like, hanged.
You're by yourself, like, in your car.
Brushing my teeth. Hanged. Like, and I'm like, I have to say it, though. I have to correct.
You gotta correct it. I always laugh because I remember when I was younger in, like, middle school and stuff, I remember being so annoyed by that phrasing where I was like, it just sounds better to say hung. And, like, to me, that's just how it was. And I don't know if it's, like, my refusal to just accept that that's how it is. But every now and then I'll be talking to someone and I'll say hung and they stop for a second and then I stop and I'm like, what did I do? What is this? Even, like, one of my videos that I have on TikTok or something, I went through the whole thing, and it took me so long to film it. So then I finally, like, was done, and I was listening to it again for the captions, and I noticed that I said it, and I was like, no. And I was like, it's too late now. That's just how it is. So I put in the comments, I was like, the correct terminology is actually hanged. Please don't listen to me on that aspect. I was like, I give up. I give up today. This is just how it is.
Our final question to kind of wrap everything up is, what advice do you have for anyone listening who wants to get into forensics?
Ooh, yes. So I would definitely say try to explore different things when you go to college. Like, see what classes you can take, because I think it's just as important to figure out what you don't like as well as finding out what you do like, because then you kind of know how to work around it. Like, I learned that I just absolutely hated, like, fibers and ballistics and stuff like that. And so I'm like, now how do I not have to deal too much with that? But, like, it kind of helps guide you, and then it can show you different areas and, like, what's good for you to do, what makes sense for you. And as well, too, you can see the more realistic aspect of it, because, you know, with shows and stuff, it's like one person doing everything, and that's not how any of this works. And so people need to understand that, like, you do one very specific thing, and that's kind of just what you get stuck with. So you want to make sure that you enjoy it, and it's always good to kind of get that experience in there and then talk to different people. Try to network, too, because networking is such a big part, because forensics is so, like, oversaturated now with, like, popularity because of TV shows and whatnot. So being able to network and, like, get to know people online or however you prefer to do it is very, very important, because then when you reach out later for, like, a job or, like, I don't know, to tour or whatever it may be, they'll be like, oh, yeah, like, I remember you. I know you. And so then you'll be more likely to kind of be picked over some other people. But, yeah, definitely just getting engaged with those different things and joining clubs and like getting to meet different people and just looking into that, doing some of your own research about the area is always good. Seeing what you can get involved with on campus, I think, is always really important. And I always tell people too, like, depending on how your area works, like, if you can view an autopsy or something, definitely go and do it as soon as you can. Because then too, like, and sometimes you really don't know if you're going to be able to handle it until it's too late.
Yeah.
And especially if you're thinking about being, like, a forensic pathologist, because you have to go through med school and residency before you even really get to forensic pathology stuff. So then it's like, you don't want to get all the way to that point and then realize, like, oh, I actually hate this.
Oh, yeah.
Now that you just spent, like, 10 years doing all this other stuff. So I always tell people, like, see what you can do, reach out to people, even see if you can just, like, get a tour or something if they don't let you view an autopsy, like, just try to get involved in different ways. That's what I love to tell people to do.
That's awesome. Yeah. I always say that with the internships, it's like you can network, like getting people out there. And you also see if it's for you, if it's something that you like to do or like, yeah.
That's what I did. I did my internship at the office I'm working at now, and I networked and they reached out and they're like, hey, this position's open. Feel free to apply if you're interested still.
Yeah, yeah. It's always really nice to kind of just leave your mark on these people so they know that you're there. And I always tell people, like, even if you don't see a job opening, you can still email them and just talk to them. Like, sit down and have a discussion. Like, talk about the career path, like, what they look for, things that you can do, stuff like that. Because every area is going to be different. And then that way they'll remember you and you just sneak in a little bit of networking, you know, send them a little thing on LinkedIn. But yeah, no, definitely important to just get to know the people around you that you're going to be working with and see how that goes.
Yeah, totally. Well, that kind of concludes our talk and interview. Thank you so much for taking the time to guest star on our on an episode with us. We enjoyed talking to you so much.
Right. No, it was so fun because I always listen to your guys' podcast, like when I'm driving back and forth to Michigan. It like keeps me awake. So I'll just put it on. I have them all like downloaded so that way it just keeps going.
Oh, thank you.
Just, yeah, it keeps me awake so that way I don't start falling asleep because I just do the whole driving one thing and it's like a 15, 16 hour thing. I just keep going because I don't want to stop and I'm like so involved too. I'll hear you guys say something and I'll be like, oh yeah, I remember like this time I did this thing or when I had a case that looked like this or I remember this episode of this show.
We'll have to have you come back and we can all watch a show or something.
Yeah, that would be so.
You can like give us your red flags and green flags, especially because like you work in like a different type of office, like a more like rural area. So like I know I have some questions about like rural area offices that like I don't know the answers to. So yeah, we'll have to do this again. That'd be so much fun.
I would love that. I love talking about our weird little office. It's so fun.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, we'll definitely have to plan that for the future.
Yes, just Absolutely. Let me know. I love it. I'm so glad I got to talk to you guys, too. It's so fun.
Yeah, this was awesome. I'm so glad we finally got to talk to you. This is great.
I know. We're finally, like, meeting face-to-face.
Right, yeah. It's always so exciting when I get to, like, actually talk to people online because I'm like, wow, you are a real person.
Yeah, you're not just a stranger on the internet.
You're not catfishing me.
It's like, I see you, like, live your life every day online, but... this is different. Okay, well, thank you guys again. I had so much fun.
Thanks.
Bye. Thanks for listening to this episode of Inside the Morgue. If you enjoy this podcast and want to keep learning about forensics, keep on listening. You can find us on Instagram at Inside the Morgue Pod and DM us with anything you want to talk about. We'll be back next week for a brand new dissection.